Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. First, let's look a little bit at the weather. I don't know about you, but yesterday it really started to feel like winter. Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 27, but again, chilly with the wind. And Wednesday may see a few more clouds, but should remain partly sunny. But on the evening, there's a chance of snow, mainly after midnight. Thursday may see more snow and possibly rain later in the day. Friday should be sunny, but snow is predicted for Friday night with rain or snow on Saturday and Saturday night and on Sunday. And this is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, hosting this hour. Farewell to Bernardo Bertolucci, who died today at 77 in Italy, the great filmmaker. Here is Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa stories in the news.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here on this Monday after Thanksgiving weekend. We start with a story about food that made big news around Iowa last week. The Hy-Vee and Fairway stores removed all romaine lettuce from their store shelves after new warnings of possible E. coli contamination. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had issued a food safety alert on Tuesday, warning consumers not to eat any romaine lettuce and warning retailers and restaurants not to serve and sell any until more was learned about that E. coli outbreak. Several dozen people in 11 states had gotten sick from the outbreak that started in October. There was also news last week about Democratic Iowa State Senator Nate Bolton. A woman who has accused him of sexual misconduct filed a formal ethics complaint with the Iowa Senate. 34-year-old Sharon Wegner, who is a Des Moines lawyer, filed the complaint against Bolton. She alleges that Bolton pursued her in a bar and repeatedly grabbed her buttocks without her consent. At the time, Bolton was running for his Senate seat and had not yet been elected. Bolton was running for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination this year when the allegations came out. He dropped out of the race the next day, but he has not stepped down from his Senate job despite calls from Democratic leaders to do so. Also last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds floated the possibility of automatically restoring voting rights to felons in Iowa. That could affect about 52,000 people in the state. Reynolds did not go into details about the specifics of her plans. Iowa and Kentucky are the only states in the nation that ban felons from voting unless the governor individually restores their rights. Also last week, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley said President Trump should not publicly criticize Trump's chief of staff, John Kelly, on Twitter. Grassley's comment came after Trump told a TV interviewer that he liked Kelly's work ethic, but said there are, in Trump's words, certain things I don't like that he does. Grassley said Kelly, who is a retired United States Marine Corps general, needs to be shown respect. Last week also brought word that a longtime Catholic priest in Iowa was removed from the ministry indefinitely after a girl complained a year ago that he improperly touched her. The fourth grader alleged that the Reverend Brian Danner of St. Mary's Catholic Church in Humboldt rubbed the top of her leg while taking her confession. The diocese reported the incident to the county attorney last December and has revoked Danner's ability to function as a priest indefinitely. Authorities did not pursue a criminal investigation after the girl's parents said they were unsure whether they wanted to move forward. There was tragedy this past Thanksgiving week. Two women died in a head-on crash on Interstate 29 in Monona County in western Iowa. Three passengers were injured in that same wreck. One of the drivers was from Omaha, the other was from Colorado. And a six-year-old boy died after he, another child, and a man fell through pond ice in central Iowa. It took place at a privately owned pond in Montezuma. In Fort Collins, Colorado, an Iowa man and his adult daughter died when their vehicle was hit by a stolen vehicle last week. 55-year-old John Neese of Cedar Rapids and his 38-year-old daughter Nicole of Fort Collins were the fatal victims. Also last week, an Iowa man was arrested for allegedly killing his own grandmother. 21-year-old Elliot Stowe was being held at the Monona County Correctional Facility. He is accused of killing 66-year-old Cheryl Stowe. There was word last week that authorities said a woman found dead in Webster City had been the victim of domestic violence for more than a year before her boyfriend allegedly killed her. 32-year-old Zachary Nelson Bassett was arrested in St. Joseph, Missouri, and charged with murder in the death of his 50-year-old girlfriend, Andrea Sokolowski. There was also a story last week that one man was behind bars after months of alleged harassment and even a few reported threats of sexual abuse in a central Iowa nursing home. 60-year-old Stephen Silliman was arrested after alleged comments he made to an employee and acts he made toward a fellow resident at the Mitchell Village Care Facility in Mitchellville. Last week also brought news that a Davenport man whose wife's intellectually disabled daughter was always locked in a bedroom had been given 10 years in prison. 56-year-old Eugene Harris had been convicted of neglect of a dependent person. Trial for his wife, 48-year-old Kimberly Williams, is set to begin next March. Also last week, word that a Central Iowa man had sued two Des Moines police officers, claiming they racially profiled him last July when they pulled over his sedan and searched him. DeJuan Haynes said his constitutional rights were violated. A deputy Des Moines city attorney said the city will vigorously defend the case. There was another lawsuit in the news last week. Eight Davenport employees sued the city, saying the city did not properly supervise their former housing program manager who hid a camera in a restroom. That former manager, Roy DeWitt, was sentenced to 16 years in prison last July after pleading guilty to 8 counts of invasion of privacy. Now Davenport City Attorney Tom Warner is disputing the allegations against the city and says Davenport was not negligent. There was word last week that hundreds of Iowa National Guard soldiers had been told they were overpaid after a year-long deployment to the Middle East and that they must make plans to repay the money. The 248th Aviation Support Battalion held a homecoming ceremony earlier this month to celebrate returning from Kuwait and Iraq. The next day, about 366 of the battalion's 400 soldiers were informed about the money issue. The overpayments ranged from $2 to $4,500. Also last week, a report that developers who invested $11 million to install 3 wind turbines in eastern Iowa were tearing them down after losing a legal battle with nearby residents. It was only the second time nationally that a judge had ordered wind turbines to be torn down, and it had never happened before in Iowa. All this happening in the community of Fairbank, which is about 50 miles from Cedar Rapids. Last week also brought news that Amtrak ridership in Iowa is on a downward skid. At the same time, the passenger train rail service is setting revenue records across the nation. About 58,000 riders boarded Amtrak passenger trains at 6 stations in southern Iowa for the 12 months ending this past September 30th. That's a 4% drop from the year before. But railroad advocates still hope that Amtrak service eventually will be expanded across the state's midsection to Iowa City, Des Moines, and Omaha. Also last week, word that the Varsity Theater in Des Moines, a beloved one-screen movie theater that opened on Christmas Day in 1938, will show films this one final holiday season before it closes its doors for good next month. The final day of movies there will be Sunday, December 30th. The theater opened when such stars as Bette Davis, Clark Gable, Jimmy Stewart, Errol Flynn, and Katharine Hepburn were all lighting up the silver screen. Not all the news last week was sad or bad. Example number one, someone in Marshalltown put more than just pocket change into a Salvation Army red kettle the day before Thanksgiving. He or she put a 1-ounce gold bar into that kettle. The Salvation Army plans to sell the gold to a local vendor. Gold was valued at more than $1,200 an ounce last week. Example number two, the Iowa woman who gave birth to a baby boy on the side of a road on Thanksgiving Day while she was on her way to the hospital. Heather Reed of Lacona and her boyfriend pulled off the side of the road on Southwest 8th Street in Des Moines when things started happening, and everything turned out just fine. Example number three, a follow-up to a story we had told you about earlier, the 170 dogs rescued from a Worth County property that authorities called a puppy mill. A select group of the dogs are now being placed at Midwest shelters where they'll be put up for adoption and fostering. Agencies receiving the dogs include the Cedar Bend Humane Society in Waterloo, the Humane Society of North Iowa in Mason City, and Humane Societies in Omaha, Nebraska, and Wichita, Kansas. The dogs not put up for immediate adoption will stay at an undisclosed temporary shelter while they continue to be assessed. And example number four, a heartwarming story that just might bring tears to your eyes. Saber, a retired police dog for the Urbandale Police Department, was laid to rest last week after a final send-off ceremony. He was put to sleep because he had numerous health problems, and veterinarians said it would be best. Saber earned many awards during his career as a police canine, which spanned from 2009 to 2015. He found narcotics with a total street value of $5 million, and he was responsible for sniffing out all kinds of drugs. He was credited with finding evidence that led to more than 110 arrests. His final send-off, before he was euthanized, included walking out the police department doors, past saluting officers, before getting a final ride in a patrol car. Rest in peace, Saber. Of course, college football continued to make news across the state of Iowa this Thanksgiving weekend. Iowa State University's football team came from way behind to defeat Kansas State 42-38 at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday night. What was more surprising was that earlier in the week, Iowa State announced that this coming Saturday's scheduled home game against Incarnate Word had been canceled. Instead, Iowa State will play a home game against Drake University. It will be the first time the two schools have met on the football field in 33 years. There were other games involving Iowa teams, of course. The University of Iowa defeated Nebraska 31-28, and then Hawkeyes head coach Kirk Ferentz made national news when he was shown bleeding from the mouth during a live Big Ten Network interview after the game. Seems that during the Hawkeyes celebration right after the game ended, Ferentz collided with quarterback Nate Stanley, which seemed to split open the coach's lip. And let's not forget the University of Northern Iowa, which started its playoff run in the football championship subdivision by defeating Lamar 16-13. And that is your summary of Thanksgiving week news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be right back here on Friday with news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Until then, have a great week.
Flock of birds hovering above, just a flock of birds. That's how you think of love.
Sounds emanating from our wetland marshes. Sandhill cranes provide an animated display of leaping and calling that occurs whenever cranes congregate. These marsh dancers provide a fascinating show. After a 98-year absence, sandhill cranes once again began nesting in 1992 at Otter Creek Marsh on the Iowa River just east of Tama. This year, four additional counties have included sandhill cranes in Wright, Hamilton, Howard, and Johnson counties. Cranes have now nested in 26 counties that include the Chautauqua Wildlife Area to our southeast in Polk County and at Anderson Lake in Hamilton County just to our north. Cranes stand 4 to 5 feet tall and weigh about 14 pounds. Pioneering pairs nesting in Iowa are spilling over from the Wisconsin crane flock. Our cranes are greater sandhill cranes, which are slightly different than the lesser sandhill cranes that gather by the hundreds of thousands near Kearney, Nebraska each spring. In autumn, cranes leave their nesting marshes and begin congregating at only selected locations, like Otter Creek, to our east in Tama County. At first light of dawn, cranes leave their overnight locations to fly beyond the horizon. They look for secluded areas with waste grain to feed upon. Cranes like our corn. At midday, their return flights to the marsh are quite vocal and awe-inspiring. Their six-foot wingspans and tight flight formations create a measured excitement with each passing group. A few autumns ago, while constructing a wildlife viewing platform overlooking the marsh, the crane's midday return provided continuous enjoyment as wave upon wave of 5 to 7 at a time were flying overhead. Eventually, over 130 had been counted. When they land, their bugling calling continues as they joyously leap about. It creates quite a rousing ruckus in the tempered autumn colors of the marsh. So join the fun and leap on over to Otter Creek Marsh to enjoy nature's orchestrations and dazzling dances. Hopefully you'll be serenaded by primal calling of the wild that harkens an era when thousands of wetlands pocketed the plains. The presence of sandhill cranes, trumpeter swans, Canada geese, and a myriad of wetland waterfowl and wildlife have become welcome additions to Iowa's landscape. They enhance our spirits with hope, and they elevate the quality of all our lives. The marsh dancers are worth it. Try to share the experience with children and friends sometime soon. And that's our focus on phenology for today.
Phenologies are funded by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County. Check out their website with this great local environmental organization at oasco.org. And this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
Thank you, Pat. The music you heard between Dennis's News Roundup and Pat's report was "O Fly On" by Coldplay. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening in. You may have noticed by now that at KHOI we are raising money, which is needed for operating this radio station. It's a crucial time of year for the station because we depend upon the support and generosity of people like you. During this time, we talk with you about money. So, what better time than this to share with you a remarkable person here at KHOI with a remarkable story about money? Aladdin Al-Kathiri engineers Local Talk every Wednesday and Friday morning at 7 a.m. Today, Cynthia is here, but two other days of the week, Aladdin comes in. And one day after we had completed a show, I learned that Aladdin, when he was 16, actually owned a successful restaurant. Wow. I sat down with him in the studio to record his story over the weekend, and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, was here for the holidays from Ann Arbor, so he joined in the conversation as well. Aladdin told us his story, which is a story about success and money, and he started out by describing to us where he grew up.
I grew up in North Philadelphia, just on the south side of Temple University. It was a nice little enclave of a neighborhood because if you went any direction, you were in a whole different world. Where it was scary for me. But our neighborhood was kind of nice. Working class, African American. Most of the homes were two-parent households. They all worked. And that's not, you know, the whole city you don't describe as that. Philadelphia has a lot of poor, very poor. areas, and even today, some of the poorest in the country. You know, you go into a certain neighborhood, and you can tell by just looking around where you are. And it was like that then, even worse. So I've always worked. I have, having a newspaper route, we're at 11, huge newspaper route. I mean, I think I had everybody in the neighborhood, and I used to pull two shopping carts with newspapers. And it wasn't a lot of money. I don't remember the amount, but bought my own clothes and was able to give my mom money, and that felt good. And I had the summer jobs and things like that. But by 16, you know, I still had a little, would have a job here and there. But I wasn't really looking for opportunities. In fact, my mind and in my classmate, our minds were on wanting to be DJs, you know, the disco era. By 16, I went to a private school, went to a friend's school. Of course, this private school was a lot different from the public neighborhood school I went to, where everyone was kind of like me, I thought, at the public school. At the private school, there was so much more diversity. I wasn't exposed to that before. Different income levels, different, you know, race and even thought. It was very different from the world I grew up in. It's only 2 miles away, but it's a huge difference. And so I was really curious about everything. And there, people liked me. They liked me more than when I went to public school. I wasn't the kid who was liked. You know, wow. I was a little fat kid. And I had told jokes and kept people laughing, and I didn't get beat up. In my neighborhood, people, when we got a little money, we bought the best clothes we could find. The latest in style. Or if you had wingtip shoes, you were really... But these kids, they didn't spend their money like that. They had one pair of shoes. Dockers, I think, was the big thing back then. You know, maybe a pair of Calvin Kleins. But they wore the same pants every day. So it wasn't very pretentious. I didn't realize the difference until that's when I started to pay attention to it. Why was it different? And at the time, to me, it wasn't about race.
It seemed like markers of class.
It was. Uh-huh. But at 16, I didn't know what it was. From my limited experience, I knew it was different. I spent a lot of time with other kids my age doing different stuff that we had done in our neighborhood. We went to concerts. I'd never gone to concerts. I remember we went to a concert, six of us, and we were in this small car, a Fiat, the two-seater convertible. And we were all piled in this car. But it was fun. All of the experiences were different for me. And I'm sure that's because of they had privilege that came with money. At lunchtime, we would go to lunch at a restaurant downtown. Our school was downtown. So I'm thinking, don't order more than I have in my pocket. But I notice one of the kids got the check, and he just signed his name. And I'm thinking, wait. Like, what's that? And, of course, someone else told me later, his dad owns the building. So I was amazed by that. How does that happen? How is it that they own stuff? I knew people own their homes, but not the buildings downtown.
Right.
So that's...
Right.
But then I started to pay attention. Not in an envious sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just a curiosity sense. You know, how is it different?
Mm-hmm.
How is it, you know, what did they do in their lives that made them different than us?
That's the voice of Aladdin Al-Kathiri, who is the Wednesday and Friday morning engineer for this show, Local Talk, speaking with us this past weekend when he related his remarkable story to me and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, whom you also hear. He has set the stage by describing where he grew up in Philadelphia, an introduction to a private school, discovering for the first time in his life class. Now let's hear what happened next.
I wasn't really looking for opportunities. In fact, my mind and in my classmate, our minds were on wanting to be DJs, you know, the disco era.
And your friend, was he from the same kind of a background as you? Or?
No. They lived outside the city, and they were wealthy. They owned buildings downtown. So we're at his house, and we're, you know, trying to learn this DJ stuff. And meanwhile, we're complaining about a restaurant we had been to earlier. And the conversation went in the direction of, if I had a restaurant, I'd do it like this. I'd do that. I'd do this. And his dad must have been listening. Came in the room. Guys, you should just do it.
What? Huh? What?
Both of us were like, huh? So I was 16. Like, come on, Dad. You know, no, really. Wow. Sounds like a good idea. You should do it. Before that, we really weren't thinking that specifically about it. But he just kind of stayed with us on it. He started the coaches. We didn't have any idea even where to start. And over a period of, I don't know if it was weeks or months, but we had to develop the concept. Then we got to
location? Well, where would you put this restaurant? Well, downtown somewhere. Well, where? Downtown's kind of crowded. Talked about the differences of what's going on downtown. We had to go and actually scout locations. At the time, they were building a mall downtown called the Gallery. Brand new, first mall in the city of Philadelphia, and it was downtown. We went in, and he kind of coached us on the conversation to have with the manager of the mall. And of course, it was tough. Both of us were very good on the phone. Uh-huh. Chuck was good. Mm-hmm. I was good. I mean, and we did a lot of things that other kids didn't. I mean, like when there would be a concert of someone we'd like, we would meet them at the airport. We met Bruce Springsteen at the airport, and we were walking through the airport with him, up close with him, taking pictures and everything. And the people in the airport, really, they thought we were with him. So we would get access to these kind of things just by effort. So maybe that had something to do with the dad saying, do it. So we're at the Gallery. I went first, and I wasn't really getting a good response. I didn't get the sense I was being taken seriously. And we talked about that. Chuck and I, you know, we were pretty straightforward, and nothing was difficult to talk about with us. And we got to the point, well, maybe you should do it, you know, because I'm black, he's white. I don't know if that had a difference, but we ended up getting a space. I don't think he took us seriously until we were able to come up with a deposit, which was, it was like 9 months. Huh. We had to pay up front.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know.
That would be very serious. Yeah.
But we didn't know. We put all of this together in our numbers because we had to figure out everything before we even talked to anybody about money. You know, the restaurant supply. And most of the supplies, it was one-time furniture. Mm-hmm. You know, tables, chairs. You know, and it's two guys. It was, okay, chair. Uh-huh. You know. And we knew other people who were in the business. But we had to figure this out on our own. Yellow Pages.
We were wondering, how did he find all these things, you know?
Yeah. Yellow Pages. No internet. There was no internet. There were no cell. This was 76.
Right. Yellow Pages.
Right?
That's true. That was the Google of the time.
We hired everybody. Our cooks cooked for us as part of their interview. Our first cook was an Italian guy. He was from Italy. He didn't speak a word of English.
Oh, man.
You know, and I didn't speak a word of Italian, neither did Chuck. But he could cook a hamburger, he could cook some french fries, he could cook a steak, and he cooked well, and he was very pleasant. He learned English, actually, while he worked with us. You know, so we hired everybody, the staff, and I worked up front, and there was an ice cream parlor. It was called Royal's Ice Cream Parlor and Restaurant. We had 12 flavors of ice cream, and Chuck managed the back of the house, so he managed all the kitchen staff and cooks, and I managed the wait staff and people who worked the ice cream. And so we were at the end of the hallway next to the entrance to the parking lot. On the other side of that was Gimbel's. The mall was anchored by Gimbel's. Gimbel's was the store in, you know, New York. They did the Thanksgiving Day Parade for years. They did it in Philadelphia, too. So it was a really good location. Now, when we chose it, that wasn't in our heads. But we got to that, I think, through some coaching and conversation. Well, it might be a good location because of these things. Uh-huh. So we got the place. The mall opened. Of course, a new mall. It's going to be busy. The mall opened. We opened. And we did really well.
That's Aladdin Alkathiri, Local Talk studio engineer, who is here on Wednesdays and Fridays. And he's relating his story to me and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright. We were here in the studio over the weekend. You also hear Randy's voice. And as he's telling us about how at the age of 16, Aladdin became a successful restaurant owner, a remarkable story about growing up and money. So here's Randy commenting on Aladdin's amazing experience and asking him to explain it some more.
I've seen lots of restaurants go belly up. You know, I think of people who, I have a great recipe. I'll start a restaurant.
Yeah.
And they're just out piles of money and burnt out and totally wrecked by the end of the experience, you know. But yours is different. And it seems to me that the primary difference is this mentor that you had.
Yeah. It's about the numbers and the plan. And so that was part of the learning process. We would go over the numbers every night with his father. And he would tell us what these numbers meant, what's good, what's not good, where we have to worry, all of that. So he would tell us something and give us time to think about it and respond. And this is how he would normally talk to us.
You never get rebellious?
No. No, it was our business. You know, if it was our business, if we didn't do it, it would fail. It was us fail. Gosh. You know, we did the work. He pointed us in the right direction. And we got to a point where a few weeks in, or I don't know, maybe a month in or so, we were looking at the numbers again. And we were doing well. But then this one night, he hit me with, your ice cream's not making money. he said, you have to do something about that. Uh-huh. And I couldn't think of anything. I just couldn't think of, what am I going to do to get people to buy ice cream? So one day we're out shopping, you know, some other classmates, you know, and they're looking for something else. We were in Lord & Taylor's, I remember that. And we walked past these goblets, glass dish with the long stem. And I don't know why it struck me, but it did. And I got one. And we went back to the restaurant like the next day, and I start filling it with ice cream. Fill up the bottom, put some topping on it, another layer topping. Ended up with 16 scoops of ice cream. And Chuck, like, what are you doing? You know, why are you waiting? And I'm just wait. And I was finished, satisfied with what I had created. And I don't know where it came from. I said, Afghanistan Banana Stand. Well, what's that mean? I don't care. I don't know what it means. It's a good name for an ice cream. And then we decided, when someone orders this, and if they eat the whole thing alone, we'd pay for their dinner. We made a big sign that we hung on the wall behind us. And when someone would order it, we'd make a lot of noise, you know. And I learned that from another place. And everybody's watching. And when we did that, folks started ordering ice cream. Every time we sold one of those, we sold a lot of ice cream. That changed everything for us. Now the front of the house is making money and the back of the house is making money. I learned something from that. You know, I guess it was marketing.
Right.
We were really businesslike, but then we started really loosening up.
And having fun with it.
Having fun with it, right. You know, with a lot of young people.
Yeah. Well, I see in this Afghanistan Banana Stand a playfulness, you know, a kind of like a joy. And I feel like that gets really missing in lots of businesses.
Yeah. I think it was a huge experience for me. Huge. It just made me feel like I can do anything.
There's confidence.
I think that was a big thing.
Oh, man, it's a big thing any day. You were making money at 16 in your own business, which is unusual.
Yeah. Now, I had jobs, so I was used to having some money. I never thought that I'd be determining how much. Before that, my experience was apply for a job, and the wage they offered was the wage I took. I didn't get rich from it, but on a regular basis, we were doing well, you know, that weekly, monthly, we were doing well. We knew what our bills were. You know, we paid our bills monthly. We paid our investors monthly. You know, we had a good plan. We were in a good place. Our timing was good, and we did well. We didn't owe anybody any money, you know, and we sold with good timing. My grandfather had a restaurant, but I don't think his process was the same process I went through. It wasn't easy. It was a struggle. It was kind of like a lot of under-the-table stuff, not on record and cash. And I mean,
capital to work with makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Well, what about this mentorship idea? The guy's father stepped in, and he heard you talking and heard your interest, and he decided to step in and encourage you.
Yeah.
Would you do that for
Absolutely. Someone? Yeah. I would do it. Today, when I look back, I'm thinking he must have gotten some pleasure from it, pointing these kids in the right direction and watching them succeed. Looking back, he had time to be around. My mother worked. You know, my mom raised us. She was a single parent. She raised us by herself, five kids, and she was working. And I had uncles and, you know, other family around, but I think he had time to be around. I mean, he was available to listen to what we're talking about.
What's the most important thing that he taught you about business?
The work. It's a lot of work. There were some expressions like when you have a business, you just own a job. Another part of that was, you know, it wasn't about, I mentioned the school and there are different people with different wealth levels. You know, there was wealthy and not wealthy. But I also learned about access to money. So that's where this lesson was huge in, because he didn't give us anything. And this business didn't change. I don't think it changed my economic class, but I learned some things about access to money.
Robert Putnam had this book called Our Kids that I read, and he talked about the segregation of neighborhoods by class that we have now. It's like everybody wants to live with people that make basically the same income they make. And in 76, people would hang out with people from other classes. And it sounds like what you're talking about was a good example of that. And it's something that we could sure use in our world today, I think.
Yeah.
It's like
that
kind of crossing over those boundaries of and mentoring kids.
So if you were going to mentor KHOI, what would you say to KHOI?
Oh, okay. Well, you know,
I had a conversation about that today, too, with a friend of mine.
I mentioned that we're trying to raise money. Say we're about a third to our goal, about $40,000. People will pay for something they'll miss if it's gone. I know about the fun I have here. You know, I walked in and had no idea what was going on here. I saw KHOI. What are they doing? And I think that's worth a lot.
I do, too. Actually, I think that's sort of like Afghanistan, Bananistan.
Yeah.
It's fun, and it's playful, and right. I think that there's a lot of that about KHOI. Mm-hmm. It is fun and playful, in addition to being valuable.
Mm-hmm. You and I usually meet each other at around 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I certainly know how I feel when I have to get up at the crack of dawn. Everybody's not real talkative at first.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes things kind of go haywire, right?
Right. And for me, that's the most fun time.
Right.
It's fun.
But by 8 o'clock, by the time Uncle Talk is done, we feel like we did something really fun, right?
Yep. And I was in here the other night, Saturday night. There were folks, you know, who had a show, and I'd never been in here at night. And I was surprised. There were people here, and they were... And it's really a lot of fun. And it's all volunteer, so no one's being forced to do anything.
And
so
a lot of times they don't.
Believe me.
But it's so much... And the community aspect. I mean, that part is priceless. I mean, that goes back to when I went to the new school... It wasn't about some pride that I'm going to a private school. The community was so diverse, and I met people I just didn't know about. I just didn't know people were different from me. And when I first came to Ames in 94, this place was a lot different than it is now in terms of diversity.
Uh-huh.
You know, the where the people were from, what they look like, how they think. Story County is so much different now, the diversity now. That's a good thing. Uh-huh. And there's so many people here for different reasons. A lot of them are drawn to the university, but they come from so many places. Uh-huh. And they're here for so many different reasons. And unless we engage them, we won't know, you know. And that's one of the values I see here. And when I talk about KHOI, that's what I talk about. Hey, you really need to come on down because the things you care about, how do we know you care about them?
Right.
How does anyone know? And that's huge. That's worth paying for because drawing in all of the diversity in this community, I bet there are some people out there who would love that the rest of this area or the world knew what they cared about or cared about what they care about. Bring it here. Hey, there's an opportunity for you to have a voice here. That's huge. You know, there's so much that's enjoyable here. And I think, you know, it's about people. It's about us. When a new person or another person walks in the door, it's really, I mean, I've met a lot of people just sitting here, just the people who come in and share their points of view and that are being interviewed. And it's like you said, we could use a lot more of that.
Connectedness, yes.
Yeah.
Because everybody on the surface looks so much simpler than they really are. And there's so much going on that you never see until you have a reason to interview them or, you know, sit down in front of a microphone. And it just kind of boggles my mind sometimes what all is happening around here.
Some of the folks who work here, I would have never met these guys. They're interesting. You know, I enjoy talking to them after the show, you know, before, during. Mm-hmm. And I would have never met them. We tend to live in our boxes.
Your restaurant in Philadelphia is a really good example demonstrating that when you allow that diversity to happen, not only do you end up having more fun, because diversity is more fun than anything.
Right.
It opens up the opportunity for unusual and wonderful things to happen that one would not have imagined.
Right.
And it doesn't get any better than that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
So why don't we tell the people why we're here?
All right. I'll let you do the honors.
So hi, everybody. Again, my name is Aladdin Al-Kathiri. You heard some of my story. Here's why community radio is important to me. I mentioned that this community has grown so much. It's so diverse, and everyone, every little piece of the diversity quilt should be here, letting us know who you are and why you are. And that's valuable. And we need your support. We need your financial support. So to support KHOI Radio, the easy way, call 515-292-2878 to become a member. And you can also donate by going to khoifm.org and clicking on the donate button. We thank you for your support.
And in case being a member sounds scary, we're not going to come and tell you have to do anything. other than just to give us $55 or more.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Being a member is somebody who has put their money down to invest in providing working capital for mm-hmm. this station. That's what we're asking from. Of course, you're welcome to do more at the station if you'd like, but right now becoming a member just means that you make a $55 donation or more, and you can then say, I have invested in keeping community radio in Central Iowa.
Right. Keeping the lights on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. KHOIFM.org is where you go to make your donation. KHOIFM.org.
The return on that investment would be an investment in diversity in this community.
And all that that brings, right?
Right.
Whether it brings restaurants or or just a good time and respect
or something
for the
community. New to do with ice cream.
Thank you, Aladdin. Thank you for telling
Aladdin.
Us your story.
That was great.
Appreciate it.
All right.
And again, many thanks to Aladdin Alkathiri, our engineer for Wednesday's and Friday's local talks. Thank you for sharing your story with us, Aladdin. And I hope that his story and myself and my brother-in-law, Randy Wright, inspired you to support KHOI. We've been joined for a few minutes by Pat Schlarbaum, our environmentalist reporter. Pat, quite a story Aladdin had to tell, right?
It sure is. Like you might expect, people that stop in do have golden personalities, and then the more you learn, the more you want to know, and it just grows from there.
Yeah, it's amazing. Aladdin just walked into the front door one day and said, what's going on in this building? And we need an engineer at that moment, and so we said, guess what?
Yeah, he fills the role.
So that's kind of the magic of our front door. It brings mm-hmm. us what we need, and it's also the magic of KHOI. So, Pat, how do you donate to KHOI?
Well, I'd like to suggest that people listen to a program and realize how significant station is to the Ames community. And like anything else, the environment or any sort of business, it requires some maintenance every now and then or some dedicated sustaining funding. So the $55 is a pretty good commitment to the station, but it's really that sustaining role of $250 per year that we can really, really build a benchmark radio station for Ames that I think people, as they listen and go from their day-to-day activities, we can all be strengthened by that $250 sustaining membership approach. We all have our own budgets, so whatever is allowable in your personal finances, consider KHOI a friend to the airwaves and a friend to your family and community.
Pat Schlarbaum, another personality that makes KHOI what it is. Thank you, Pat. And again, the place to donate is KHOIFM.org, KHOIFM.org. You'll see there's a donate button there. It's a secure way to donate. Or do what Aladdin did. Just come down to 410 Douglas Avenue and walk in that magic front door and say, I hear you need members.
Yeah, and, we're here by the phones.
Here's my check, or here's my penny, or whatever. Here's my $1,000 bill.
Or please call in, 515-292-2878.
Yeah, we've got people here, so if you call, probably somebody will come and answer the phone and take your pledge. And if you have been supporting KHOI, thank you for your membership, and thank you for supporting community radio.
Yeah, and thank you, Ursula. Thank you for all that you do here to keep this radio station above ground and floating along, and let's build on this positive experience.
Speaking of positive experiences, Crystal Davis is here from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and your job is to create positive experiences in our community, right?
Absolutely. We're here to tell you all about what's happening in our community, and there's so much to see and do.
Oh, my goodness.
And
oh, my goodness.
Eat.
You have no idea what Crystal has in front of her. I wish you could see it.
So now
a stack of papers.
Yes. So Thanksgiving's over. So we've got a whole plethora of fun things you can do leading into the holiday season. To get started, Snow Magic is happening in downtown Ames right now. And so we just want to make you aware that they're doing Mingle on Main. And this will be on the Thursdays starting this week and into December from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Some of the stores will be open late. So come on down to downtown Ames on Thursday nights. They'll have special sales, treats, and drinks and contests. And we encourage you to shop local as always. All through the weekends through the month of December, home-based businesses will showcase what they have to offer inside North Grand Mall. So be sure to also check that out. And maybe there's some special businesses you don't always get to see and partake of and see what they have to offer. So check that out through the weekends through December. And then also, if you're looking for some fun at Ryman Gardens, on Thursdays, they have free extended holiday hours, 4:30 to 8 p.m. Thursdays from now until Christmas. And you can see the indoor holiday train display. And what a great opportunity to get in there and see that beautiful exhibit. But my gosh, starting in December, where do you start and end?
So, where do you start? Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
We've got time.
All right.
Let's go for some of this. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. So on Saturday, starting right away on December 1st, if you're interested in the world of making your own art glass, check out Sakati Art Glass. They're located here in Ames. And December 1st, you can blow your own ball. And it's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and this is for ages 6 years and up. And so what a great opportunity to check out a local artist and experience firsthand that craft. Also on Saturday, December 1st, Cook's Emporium is having Christmas cookie demo with Margaret Welder.
Under new ownership.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Stop in at 10 a.m. I have done this before. It's a great opportunity to meet people, see what they're demoing, and of course you get a recipe and get to taste what they're doing. So check that out downtown. Continuing on, Saturday, December 1st at 3 p.m., the Ames Children's Choirs will have their annual holiday concert. This is at 3 p.m. at Collegiate United Methodist Church, and they're going to have music that features Latin, Hebrew, Italian, and English, accompanied by the piano, organ, flute, and hammered dulcimer. It'll be a great concert. You'll enjoy that, so check that out.
Great Ames tradition.
It is.
Yes.
Beautiful voices.
Yeah.
ISU Theater's got something wonderful going on. They're doing It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. So if you've never experienced this kind of presentation, they're on at the weekends starting November 30th, December 1st, 7th and 8th at 7:30 p.m. Or they have some matinees on December 2nd and December 9th, and this is at Fisher Theater. And ISU Theater always has a great production to get you in the holiday spirit. You know, Santa, I think there's going to be some sightings. I've heard he's going to be around. So Breakfast with Santa at Ryman Gardens on December 8th. They have 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. seatings. A great opportunity there to explore the gardens as well as have breakfast with Santa. We have more shopping that's happening on Saturday, December 8th. It's called the Beautiful Land Holiday Market. Mm-hmm. It'll be up in North Ames at Prairie Moon Winery and Alluvial Brewing Company, and that's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And they're going to have a lot of premium vintage and handmade pop-up market. And so they'll be featuring vintage art and design, vendors, food trucks, and Lockwood Cafe is going to have hot cocoa bar and crepes. So be sure to check that out. If you'd like to go outside, work off some of that Thanksgiving food, December 8th over at McFarland Park at 1 p.m., they're going to have the geocache elf hunt. So that'll be a fun time to go out and use GPS and search in the woods to find stockings of goodies and elves hiding nearby. So that'll be a fun outdoor activity.
A technological twist, right?
I know. Yeah. It'll be fun. I've heard a lot of people love to do that. So,
mm-hmm.
And they encourage children ages 3 and on up to come out and do that.
So is that done with cell phones?
I truthfully have never done that before, I'm not sure if they do it with cell phones or if they have equipment for you to use, but
okay.
Be something fun to check out. If you're still looking for a craft to do, maybe a homemade craft, go to the workspace at the ISU Memorial Union. From December 3rd through Saturday, December 8th, they're doing a wood-burned ornament walk-in craft.
Hmm.
And so you can drop in at any time and you can learn how to stamp a design on and trace with a wood burner. And they'll have some great help and people there to walk you through the process. We'd like to encourage you to attend Ames Public Library on Tuesday, December 4th at 6 p.m. They're doing an exhibition and a presentation called Black Lives Matter, Fashion, Liberation, and the Fight for Freedom Reception. And this is in partnership with Iowa State University's Apparel Events and Hospitality Management Seminar. And they have approached the movement's theme and fashion with a different topic. And so they'll have some things that fit what their topic was, fashion and appearance in the Black Lives Matter movement. So be sure to check that out at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, December 4th. So many things are happening. If you'd like to also continue to see Celebration in Art, you can join University Museums at the Music Hall on Wednesday, December 5th at 12 p.m. And they will do an art walk, and they're going to explore art, and you can meet inside the north entrance of Music Hall.
So this is something at ISU. This is not the downtown art walk.
No, this is something
Iowa State.
Through University Museums, and they'll kind of walk through, stay out of the cold and come along, is what they say, as they explore art that may cause you to leap for joy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Very good. There's also a community movie day coming up on Saturday, December 8th. It'll be in the Ames City Auditorium at 2 p.m. They'll be showing Home Alone. And that's part of the Snow Magic of downtown Ames, so be sure to check that out. I used to play flute when I was in high school, so this one interests me. Flutes and More will be on Saturday, December 8th at 2 p.m. This will be at the Ames Public Library, and it's a flute ensemble composed of professional adults and ISU students. Another great festive concert to check out on this holiday season. We'd encourage you over at the Octagon Center for the Arts. They'll be doing what they call a maker night, where they'll have fine silver origami pendants that you can make at 6:30 p.m. on December 8th over at the Octagon Center for the Arts. So lots of opportunities to make some gifts for those special people in your life. Christmas at the Farmhouse. This is also part of the University Museums on campus, where you can go on Saturday, December 8th and Sunday, December 9th from 1 to 4 p.m. each day and kind of celebrate what it Christmas like at the turn of the century at the Farmhouse Museum. And they'll have cocoa, and I think Santa will be there as well. The Nutcracker, an annual tradition here in Ames at Stevens Auditorium, is coming up on Saturday, December 8th and Sunday, December 9th. And it's in there. It's 38th year. A lot of local families and kids are in that performance. So an annual holiday tradition that you can't miss. We just keep on going.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
we're only up to December 10th.
I know. Okay. So, you know, there's other things than holiday going on. If you're interested in beekeeping, Story County Extension in Nevada is having a special session on 6:30 p.m. on December 10th. We can kind of learn about the hobbyist of beekeeping and kind of learn all about that. So it's open to all ages and something to keep up on. We'll also have artful yoga. If you're into yoga, this will be at the Christian Peterson Art Museum on campus on Wednesday, December 12th at 5:30 p.m. And no yoga experience is necessary. And they'll have a brief discussion of the current exhibition in the Christian Peterson Art Museum before they go on with yoga. There's also some fun happening over at Wheatsfield if you're into the wines of celebration. It's called Bubbles Galore. This is Wednesday, December 12th at Wheatsfield at 7 p.m. It's a tasting of a variety of sparkling wine styles, and you'll learn about the different techniques of production. And so we invite you to take part of that wine tasting over at the Wines of Celebration tasting over at Wheatsfield. For those of you who want to step inside and experience a butterfly blizzard, Ryman Gardens is having their annual butterfly blizzard on Saturday, December 15th at 8 a.m. It's where you can release your own butterfly. Mm. And so what a fun experience to take part in that. You know, ukuleles and banjos. Nothing says holiday like that. So December 15th at the public library at 2 p.m., they're having the public is invited for a festive sing-along and ukulele, banjo, holiday music. And you're invited to bring your own ukuleles and banjos to play.
All right.
Or just come along and sing. Just want to let you know, there's more fun outside. The Luminary Hike at McFarland Park is on December 18th, and you can choose from a 6 p.m. or a 7:30 p.m. hike, and a kind of a fun way to let the luminaries light your way around the beautiful outdoors, and a fun way to experience the winter wonderland.
Luminaries are those little lights on the ground?
Yes, oh. I know. Well, there's so much more we didn't get to. My gosh.
There's a lot. You want to do two more?
Two more. All right. So just want to let you know that Charlie Brown Christmas is coming to Stevens Auditorium on December 23rd at 3:30 p.m. So a great opportunity, a great family fun show. And then I always like to mention being outside, but McFarland Park is at it again, and they're having a snowshoe hike after Christmas on December 27th at 10 a.m. And so they'll also discuss how to snowshoe and make that a fun thing to do outside.
And do the pajama party at Ryman.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So at Ryman Gardens, they'll be celebrating the solstice, a family winter solstice pajama party on Friday, December 21st. It starts at 10 a.m. So wear your pajamas. Bring a snuggly blanket, and they're going to talk to you about the winter solstice. You'll have a warm winter drink, do some stories and craft. So, yay!
Yeah. That was Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and I will have you know, she did that all by heart.
Oh,
anybody listening to this probably does not remember everything,
right.
So where's the website to go?
Right, so go to thinkames.com. click on the calendar link at the top upper right-hand corner, and we've got a lot of events we didn't even get to, but more details there and links for more information.
Lots of fun to be had. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Thank you, Cynthia. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris. From their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly, you also heard Oh Fly On by Coldplay. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also hear this show at khoifm.org later today. We broadcast at 89.1 FM and are heard online at khoifm.org, where you can hear us streaming live or find archive of past shows. Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a radio show, so please contact us if you'd like to try your hand at reporting or engineer. We will train you and welcome you to the Local Talk team. Please remember that your participation and support as audience is what makes Local Talk and KHOI possible. Please donate to KHOI at khoifm.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting the Nutcracker Saturday, December 8th at 1:30 and 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, December 9th at 1:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. That's workinames.com.